Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode has been made in partnership with Bunge. Now, protein has been one of the dominant stories in food for years now, but the conversation is evolving from simply adding protein to being much more deliberate about where it comes from and how it performs. Plant protein is central to that conversation, and in this episode, that's where we want to focus, because it's not just as simple as picking any plant protein for your formulation. That focus on specific proteins goes further. So where should the food industry be looking? With me to discuss just that is Mark Stavro, Global Marketing Director for Proteins and Emulsifiers at Bunge. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Anthony, how are you doing? It's a great pleasure to be here. Really, really thankful for you and the Food Matters Live team for having me here today, and looking forward to exciting discussion.
That's very kind, and we're delighted to have you on, Mark. And actually, maybe a good place to start is with a bit more about you. So for our listeners, if you could tell us a bit about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. So currently, I look after marketing for our protein and emulsifier business globally here at Bunge. I've been in the food industry for probably about 20 years. Just after school, when I was in school, I ended off finishing up with my PhD in nutrition. Nutritional sciences. And then when I got into the food industry, started off within the nutrition research realm, made my way up leading nutrition globally for Bunge probably over 10 years ago. I've been in Bunge for about 16 years and then made my way over into marketing.
Yes, but obviously a lot of your career has been in nutrition. Was it something as a child, were you interested in food? Did you always imagine you'd work in the food industry?
Yeah, I always liked food. I think it probably started with my mom. She was an avid cook, right? Still is. And every day was like a home-cooked meal. So a little bit spoiled in there. She always tried to make it as healthy as possible. So, you know, she would be putting extra fiber into our pancakes, you know, when we were younger. And I was like, yeah, mom, maybe we can have just without the fiber. And so I think that sort of lit a spark in terms of nutrition.
Fantastic. Well, perfect podcast for you to appear on then. Let's get into today's topic then. So the protein trend, you know, it's not anything new, is it? It's been around for a while, but is it still going strong? Where do you see we are in the story?
Yeah, so I think that we are still in a good place when it comes to the protein trend, right? Definitely not at the beginning, right? As we all know, protein has been trending upwards for a very long time. Over one or two decades, it's been continuing to rise, right? So if we think about, you know, when it started becoming bigger and bigger, it was like a lot of like, you know, the fitness workout, and you'd read the magazines and it was like, take your protein powder. And then that kind of like transitioned into the diets. Then a lot of research started to come out on protein, showing it very important in terms of satiety, right? Together with fiber. You have then a number of weight loss studies being done. Then you move into this influencer phase, right? In the last, what is it, maybe 5, 6, 7 years. And we started to see protein really grow. I think the one thing that's been constant throughout this entire, let's call it a trend, is that there hasn't been resistance to protein, right? It's always been positioned in a very positive light.
You mentioned that lack of sort of opposition or pushback against protein or anything negative coming out necessarily about protein. Are there other factors that are driving this continued growth?
What's great is that it's simple for people to understand when it comes to health. They say, hey, my muscles are made out of protein. I eat protein for my muscles. There's a simple connection there, right? That's at a very simplistic level, right? But then at the same time, people know that it's important for growth. They know that it plays a role in satiety, weight management. So it's got a health halo over it. And I would call it probably very different than other nutrients, right? So carbohydrates, you have carbohydrates that you're recommended to eat more of, and then you have some carbohydrates that you're recommended to limit, right? Same with fat. You have some that are recommended to eat more of, and then you have some that you're recommended to limit. Whereas with protein, it's just pretty much a straight path.
Okay, so with that then, let's talk about category expansion. So what do you see as the most exciting areas for growth for protein?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of food manufacturers, I'd say, at the response of consumer demands, you know, consumers looking for, hey, could I get more protein density, let's say, in the foods that I'm eating, right? So we're seeing it in bakery, we're seeing it in snacks, where perhaps it was traditionally more of a carbohydrate-centric snack, now incorporating a little bit more protein in there, some cases a lot more protein. And so we're seeing a lot of expansion in bakery and snacks, cereals, pancakes, waffles, premixes. These are all very exciting newer areas, I would say, for protein. In some of the, let's say, traditional areas like bars, you're seeing that expand even more. And extruded snacks, beverages, just seeing a lot of, let's say, bigger everyday categories starting to incorporate more and more protein. You're even seeing it in very, very untraditional categories, right?
So, the most untraditional category we've seen it in?
I mean, I see gummy bears now when I go to the store sometimes with protein, and I'm like, oh, that's great. You know, I can feel a little bit better about the gummy bear, right? those are, you know, it's some pretty cool areas. And we've got, I think what's really exciting is that there's a lot of customers coming to us saying, hey, could you help us with innovating with protein in this non-traditional category? That's extremely exciting for our teams, application scientists. They love those types of challenges. And it's great when you can help a customer make a delicious, higher protein food product that perhaps they were, you know, having a challenge with before.
Okay, look, we've spoken a bit about protein, but we know that manufacturers are choosing plant proteins over animal-derived proteins. And I just wonder, what is it, do you think, that gives plant protein the edge?
You know, one of the biggest things going for it, I think, is economics, right? So one piece is price. I think the second piece is volatility in price and supply. Something like soy, right? You have a dedicated supply chain that starts with soybeans and the farmers, and it goes all the way through to the production of protein to the final customer. And so that lends itself to increased stability. And I think another piece is that something like soy protein, a lot of our customers are very familiar with using it.
Okay, soy is the most widely used plant protein. Can you give us some figures on that? But also, maybe this is a good opportunity to address some of soy's public image, and maybe it hasn't always had the best public image over the years. You know, where does consumer perception of soy stand today, and has it changed?
Soy represents about probably somewhere like around 65% of global plant protein ingredient use. Soy protein, definitely the biggest plant protein. Then you've got, after that, wheat protein, and followed by a pea protein, and then some of the newer proteins after that. So what's great about soy protein, or soy in general, let's say, is that if you look at it globally, right, because it's a globally used ingredient, it's a globally consumed food, strong positivity for it in probably, I would say, the majority of the world, right? So if you think about where the majority of the world sits, in Asia, right, it's been used for over 2,000 years, you know, there's like historical records on this. It's a part of everyday food consumption. And definitely when it comes to some of the bigger protein categories, it's a mainstay, I would say, of those categories in North America and in some of the Western regions as well. You do, I think, like any big ingredient, you're always going to have some segments that prefer not to use it. In the United States, it is one of the sort of allergens, together with, you know, nuts and dairy and shellfish. And so we know that at or less than half of 1% of the population have this allergenicity. Overall, what we find is that the vast majority of our customer base responds very, very favorably to using soy.
Lovely. Okay. All right. Can we talk about some of the challenges of working with soy? I presume there are things you need to overcome, as there probably are with any ingredient.
You know, on the positive side, it's technically, like I mentioned, versatile, very strong, you know, nutritionally, right? Those are some very, very good positives, and it's affordable to use. I think what we've had in general when it comes to just plant protein ingredients, right? So not just for soy, but I would just say plant protein ingredients overall. Over the years, we've had customers say, hey, in some situations, the earthy flavors that you get with plant proteins, the dull colors that sometimes come because of the pigments, they've always said, hey, it would be great if there was a world where we had a neutral tasting and a very, very light colored plant protein.
You mentioned taste. Why is that so difficult to overcome? And are you close to solving it, or is the industry close to solving it?
We've just built a brand new factory for producing soy protein concentrate. It's in just south of Indianapolis in a town called Morristown, Indiana. And, you know, we've invested heavily in this factory, you know, probably about in around $550 million. And when we were building this factory at the outset, or before we were building it, we said, hey, how can we deliver a product, a protein to the marketplace that could solve some of the challenges that we hear from some of our customers? So we met with a lot of different customers, and like I mentioned before, taste and color, big things that they wanted to see improved in plant proteins. So what we did is we designed and have built now a brand new factory that is really about creating the cleanest tasting, lightest colored plant protein in the marketplace.
Maybe now's a good time to talk about Pure Pro specifically. So can you talk us through what it is and what makes it different from other soy protein concentrates that are currently available?
Yeah, so Pure Pro is really, 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 really focused on maximizing the purity of the protein. That's one piece. The second, when we talk about purity, it's really about delivering clean taste and light color. And that's really how we are working to differentiate Pure Pro in the marketplace today.
Yeah. You sent over an image, didn't you? Which obviously our listeners won't be able to see, but maybe I can talk through it. And it's what looks like a bowl of soy beans. On the top, you've got Pure Pro, and on the bottom, you've got typical. And the difference is for me, is the brightness of the yellow of the Pure Pro soybeans, but also just the cleanliness of what's in there. So every bean in there is a pure yellow, clean bean, whereas in the typical, you've got other bits of twigs and black markings and stuff on the beans. And is that the main difference then?
I think that is really about how do you produce the cleanest tasting and lightest color, the highest purity protein. It has to do with what am I starting with? And really, our innovation at Morristown took about over 20 years of experience, right? And taking technologies from around the world that we were aware of and integrating them under one roof, right? Really with the goal to how can we make sure that when we are starting the production of soy protein concentrate, that we have the highest quality soybeans possible. And so a lot of technology, a lot of advancement was put in place to really get rid of, you know, what we call some of the undesirable beans. They don't make up a lot of soybeans in North America. They make up about maybe somewhere around 5%. But those sort of, let's say, less desirable beans can ruin the party for the rest of the beans. Those can carry off flavors. Those can carry pigments and off colors. So we want to essentially, you know, get rid of those. And also we do an incredible amount of cleaning of the beans. And those beans then become an ultra set of high quality soybeans that we use to make Pure Pro.
Yeah. Okay, great. Let's talk about the nutritional angle here, if that's okay. So soy protein is one of the only plant proteins considered nutritionally complete, which means it has all 9 essential amino acids. What does that mean in practice for manufacturers, particularly when they're trying to make claims on pack?
Yeah, and so, you know, soy is unique I would say amongst the plant proteins, as noted, you know, with the essential amino acids, I would say that all of the plant proteins contain all of the, you know, essential amino acids, right? So they're all there. The question is, are they there in the right balance that's needed to meet human protein health needs, right? And soy protein is the most nutritionally balanced when it comes to the essential amino acids. So it has all these essential amino acids, but it has them in the best proportion and in the best balance relative to other plant proteins that we see out there today. So that's one piece. And on top of that, it has a very high digestibility, right? So when you take those pieces together, at the end of the day, that just means that it has like a PDCAS, which is a scoring metric that can be used to sort of signify protein quality. It has a PDCAS of one, or pretty close to, let's say, one.
One being good.
One being exceptional, right?
Okay. One sounds low, but one, if one is basically perfect, yeah.
So I should have said 100%, right? But no, but yeah. So yeah, one is really where you want to be if you're a protein, right?
Okay.
Whether
perfect.
You're a plant or animal. Animal proteins like chicken breast, you know, whey protein, they're going to be, at one, right? And soybeans, when they are produced into the proteins, those proteins, the PDCAS is pretty much hovering right at, just about one. So what does that do? That helps a manufacturer, right? If they want to add protein, depending on the regulatory environment, right, in the world, but in a lot of markets, in order to make a protein claim, let's say, that's going to depend on how much protein are you adding? And then what is the quality of that protein that you're adding? The higher the quality, so if you got a PDCAS of one, you're making it easier for a food manufacturer to add protein and get a claim, right? The lower the PDCAS, it's just a little bit more challenging for them to hit a protein content claim. That's really where soy can help a lot of food manufacturers.
Yeah. Okay, so sustainability is also important. Is there a positive sustainability story around soy?
Yeah, definitely a positive sustainability story around soy. For us, when it comes to soy protein, what we've done is a lot of our customers have come to us over the years and said, hey, look, we have goals when it comes to carbon, right, that we would like to achieve, carbon reduction targets that we would like to meet. And if you could help us do that with, lower carbon footprint soy protein, that would be great. So what we've done to help our customers is we've measured the carbon footprint of our soy protein through what we call life cycle analysis, and it's been verified by third party. And what we've shown is that it is a very, very low carbon footprint when we've looked at it versus published data out there for what you would typically expect for soy protein concentrate. It's at or below, the typical or on the lower end. And so that is great. And then at the same time, what we do to sort of end us there is we invest together with our farmer partners in regenerative agriculture programs. So helping them incorporating no-tillage, nutrient management, cover cropping, crop rotation practices, and then there are some others. All of those together really helps to create a lower carbon footprint soybean. And then from that lower carbon footprint soybean, what we've been doing is saying, okay, how can we, especially with a new factory, how could we introduce production efficiencies to additionally reduce carbon footprint of our end ingredient? So that's something that we are very excited about, is having a soy protein concentrate that has a low carbon footprint and that can help our customers meet their carbon reduction goals.
And then looking ahead slightly, obviously, look, GLP-1's everywhere at the moment. I don't think we make a podcast without mentioning GLP-1 just right now. But there is some very early research, isn't there, suggesting that there's a possible connection between soy protein and GLP-1. And I wonder what you can tell us about that.
Yeah, so I would say that there is some emerging evidence, emerging human clinical studies that have looked at what we call like postprandial or post-meal levels of GLP-1 connected to the consumption of soy protein. And what it's showing is that basically when you're eating soy protein, you can elevate the GLP-1 levels post-meal. And that's a good thing, right? So if you take, for example, there was a very, very good study that we'd seen, and they looked at the eating rice, right? You know, so like a bowl of rice that provided a certain amount of carbohydrate and the same amount of carbohydrate from rice together with tofu, right? And in that study, what they found was that, for 90, 120 minutes after the meal, you had a reduction in blood glucose, you had a reduction in the insulin, and then you also had a big increase in GLP-1 with the tofu and rice versus eating the rice alone. So the question for us then is, hey, that would be pretty neat to see replicated when it comes to PurePro soy protein concentrate. So that's definitely something that we think about, something that we discuss, and that could be an area of future research.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back on the podcast in a year or two and see where things are. Just finally then, Ed Bungie will be appearing at the Food Matters live event in London in June, on the 3rd and 4th of June. Can you tell us what people can expect if they come over and see you there?
We are going to be showcasing a range of different food products and beverages that are made with our PurePro soy protein concentrate. Customers can look forward to enjoying, I looked at the menu yesterday, tiramisu, an espresso tiramisu beverage, which sounded delicious when I heard, and I'm looking forward to trying it, seeing it. Dulce de leche cookie. So both of them, packed with protein and delicious. And there's going to be a lot of other food products that our team is making that we're going to be showcasing, really to help people understand, hey, how can PurePro protein help you elevate the protein level of your foods and beverages, allow you to create the most delicious and the most visually appealing foods possible?
Lovely. A lovely tease. And both of those products you mentioned there, the tiramisu drink and the cookie, sound worth a try for sure. Definitely sound amazing. If people do want to get tickets to Food Matters Live in London, visit foodmatterslive.com. Mark Stavrou, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was a really great conversation. And like I say, hopefully people will go away and find out more about Bungie and also look at tickets for the event. But thank you for coming on.
You bet. Anthony, thank you so much again for having me on this show. It was a pleasure, and really big call out and thank you to the Food Matters Live team as well for having me on this.